You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things U Talk football and basketball.
Welcome to the U Talk podcast. This is Grant Bagby, as always, joined by
Joseph Silverswag. Hi, everyone.
So we finally got Joseph out of hibernation here and got him on the
podcast. Well, I'm not hibernating. I'm rearing my offspring. It's intense.
It is an intense thing. Hopefully we can get in studio together here soon, but another phone call episode. But nonetheless, we've got some good stuff coming up for you. As always, we will go through our quick hitters. There's obviously been some basketball starting up, so we got a little bit of basketball talk, and then we'll get into what everyone really wants to hear is Joseph's love of Ahmad Shine's biceps. So we'll get into the football.
It's honestly a real step down in the biceps department. He's a great running back, but the cannonballs for shoulders are missed.
I knew you were very sad. As much as the Utes won on last Saturday, I was pretty sure you were a little devastated as you didn't get to admire any of Zach Moss's muscles running over people. But nonetheless,
no. And you know what? So was everybody else.
I was fine. Win's a win. Whether it's Zach Moss running or someone else, I don't care. Nonetheless, let's get to it. First of all, you know, we gotta give a shout out. We try to support our youths out there that are trying to produce a good, business product for people. And Ute Daddy is out there as usual working on his lawn process. And in case you didn't know, step six, which is your winter lawn care. It's time for step six in the lawn process. So he's posted the video. He does videos for it. You can follow. I believe the process 3.0 is out in the public, so you can follow it there or reach out to you, Daddy. Either way, just wanted to throw him some love. I got to watch the video and get working on step six myself.
I've got to rake the leaves off my backyard. I got the front end. Got to do the back. I have a big backyard, and there's a lot of leaves.
Yes.
And the worst thing with raking is you rake, and then there's always one tree who's like, oh, what? Is it December yet? I usually drop my leaves in January. I'm fine. And you have to wait for this. In my case, this willow tree in my backyard is not going to drop its leaves. They're not even yellow. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend 6 hours this weekend cleaning up my backyard, and there's a willow tree. Like, oh, fall, right. And all the leaves are going to come down. Do it all over. So can you do?
This is where you invest in what is called a blower, a leaf blower, you know.
Oh, I like raking. I like being out there in the brisk fall air and raking.
All right. Well, nonetheless, get ready for step six, everybody. So let's get into our quick hitters. So the schedule right now, unfortunately, last night the volleyball team took a loss to number 16, Oregon. And so that was a little unfortunate, but we've got a lot of swimming and diving coming up. Apparently the youths are at the Missouri Diving Invitational, and it is like an all-week event. I did not know this, but nonetheless. Men's basketball, Mississippi Valley State, coming up tonight at 6 p.m. at the Huntsman Center. So feel free to cheer on the running youths. Cross country is in the NCAA championships. I'm not sure who's there representing the youths, honestly, but that's on the schedule. Women's basketball is coming up with Long Beach State, volleyball against Oregon State. And that's kind of like this weekend in review, I guess. Oh, wait, there's something else going on. Football game, of course, against Colorado, and you'll get plenty more.
Is there anything at stake in that football game, or is it just kind of throwaway like next week's?
No, there's something. I've heard there's something at stake in this game.
All right. Worth watching. Okay.
Yeah, we should watch it. Another big news story that we need to hit on is apparently they're going to expand Rice-Eccles Stadium. What do you think, Joseph?
Yeah. I love it. predictably, you know, 30 seconds after it is dropped, you had the sour grape scotter of Ute fans kind of disappointed in it. I think they wish there were more seats, and I understand that. It's not the ticket saver that so many Ute fans hoped it would be. But it's really cool. New locker rooms, new concessions, a lot of luxury stuff. I think the Utes are really looking way down the road. They're looking at the national trend of decreasing turnout to football games, and they want to make sure that the stadium is still packed and still fun and also still profitable. As you start whittling that down, you're going to wind up wanting to target a more kind of upscale market for your football fans, in stadium football fans. And so I think they're being smart, but I do understand the fan frustration and excited for new locker rooms, because our locker rooms are gross and terrible and need to be fixed.
Well, yeah, that south end zone building's been around since, what, the 80s or something like that, or earlier. So it's needed a refresher.
I think the ones in the south end zone are pre when it was named Rice Eccles, and then they're old, they're terrible.
Oh yeah, no. The thing is with me though is like, this is the problem I have with the Utes. Is I went to the U starting in 07 through 11, and went and got. We had must seats. Me and Jessica would go all the time, and we fell in love with the Utes. Here I am. We're doing a podcast about them. Like I follow the Utes, but now that I've graduated, the ticket prices, even for standing room, are so expensive. I choose not to buy tickets.
A big reason why I write for Rivals is because I get a press pass and I get to go to a couple games a year. Because there is, you know, I'm an attorney. My wife doesn't work, but I make pretty good money, and I can't afford to go to the game unless I don't want to take a vacation. And so that is frustrating. And I wish that they found a way to bring in fans. I don't know if you want to do raffles or drawings or more giveaways or rewards or things like that, if they don't feel like they can bring the prices down. But it is frustrating. And the biggest thing with the Pac-12 change has been the ticket prices. And you're looking at, there are some games where it's $600 just to get in for the big, you know, big home games. And it's frustrating. So I, like I said, I understand the fan frustration. I don't think it's a fan service expansion the way that a lot of people were hoping for, but I think it's the right business move and a smart decision making on the part of the program, even though
right, it's
frustrating for everyday fans.
No, and you're spot on. It's a business decision. They expanded it in such a way that will allow them to get more money and make more money on the game, on a game-by-game basis. The interesting thing is, I wonder how the drawouts are, how like the USOC, because, you know, Salt Lake's trying to impress them to get another Winter Olympics games here in Salt Lake City. I imagine they would use Rice-Eccles again. So I'm intrigued to see what maybe their thoughts were, because they didn't add a ton of seats. But nonetheless, I think that's enough. I just don't know that there's much more to say. Another quick hitter is the Utes. Maybe this is more your Joseph. I'm wondering, the winged helmets, the hand painted helmets. Do those matter? Do they matter to recruits at all, or the players?
Yes, they absolutely do. And I think that, like, it's an arms race, right? So it used to be that Oregon had 6 uniforms. And I was like, oh my gosh, and look, they look like, you know, robots or something, because they've got neon lines on them. Now everybody's doing stuff like that all the time. And so you've got to, like, figure out how to be unique. It's time to go retro, like the Utes have done. And sometimes they even do other things. But these hand-painted helmets are so cool. And Utah's the only team doing them. I think everybody else feels like it would be a copycat at this point. Last year, Dylan Mulligan on the balloon hands, that was a little weird. But the drum and feather helmet and these winged helmets are just spectacular. And then you auction them off for a bunch of money, and you donate that to various causes and things like that. And so there's a lot of charity benefit for it. And the kids love it. And you can tell they love it. They're wearing them again this week. And I do think it matters. I think it has a real impact on the players, and I think it has a real impact on recruits.
Yeah, I know. If I were a recruit, I mean, I'd be pretty stoked about the Utah, like the helmets, the all that, all the different Utah combinations.
I'm still dying for a unique. And the Utes don't do this as much as some of the other schools. I was so really hoping to get a unique, proud uniform. Right now, they've got their mountain sleeves, and then they've got their retro ones that they'll
stripes.
Wear a couple times a year.
Mountain sleeves are gone.
Yeah, the stripes and I. That's right. And I'd like the. I'd like them to do a Ute proud uniform because right now they just throw some decals on the helmets. So I'd like the uniforms to be special. And if you could combine that with sort of a tasteful but beautiful hand painted helmet that's respectful of the culture, I think that would be a real knockout moment for the Utes. And they should keep doing it. It's exciting and it's fun. I mean, I don't care about uniforms. You know, I have never cared about uniforms, but I get excited for the hand painted helmet and a couple of other things. And so my kind of rubric for that is if they can get me interested in how they look, they're probably doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, no, I'm all for it personally. I don't know what the hate is on Twitter. I guess I don't understand it, but maybe someone can email us and tell us why the wing or the hand-painted helmets or why, you know, giving an homage to Swoop and the Red-Tail Hawk is a bad thing. But so how big was recruiting? How's recruiting going right now, Joseph, as far as in a quick hitter standpoint, visits or anything along those lines?
I think it's going pretty well. The Utes are really planning for next year in recruiting, and you can tell they're using a lot of scholarships on game-ready offensive linemen, which is going to be a thin area. They are big into, oh gosh, I can't remember his name, but it's a Penn State linebacker who's doing a graduate transfer. They think they've got the inside track on that player. He's an All-American caliber linebacker, and they're trying to fill that depth issue that's going to happen when Chase Hansen and Cody Barton both leave because they're both probably NFL bound. You know, so it's going to be there's a lot of talent behind them, but you just have to have absolutely everything possible because that's the weak point. And if the Utes can fill that weak point, you know, you're looking at a Pac-12 championship playoff contender team next year. So they're all in on it. And then of course the other area they're focused on is quarterback. Still working on Jaden Daniels, still hoping to get him. I personally find it alarming that he hasn't committed yet, but he's also said that he's not committing because he wants to draw attention to his, his 7-on-17 and some other players. So profiles, he wants to keep having press there and things like that to see them. And if that's the case, that's really cool. But he's still taking official visits. He did an official visit to ASU last week. And I always get nervous when a player isn't as public about their support as you think. So we'll just see. The good news is Utah picked up a great quarterback recruit last week in Jason Shelley, who it turns out is a quarterback and is a really good quarterback. So there's a lot less worry about depth at quarterback than there was 2 weeks ago when Jason Shelley was, you know, missing passes and getting sacked against ASU.
Yeah, amazing what a week's worth of reps and game prep can do for a
quarterback. Yeah, just being the number one guy and knowing that it's you and Troy Taylor going, okay, so not as good at the deep ball, maybe not as escapable, but he's got this and this and this, how are we going to do that? You know, I think they still need to work on the red zone a little bit. We saw that in the game with too many red zone field goals.
Hold on to your game analysis. We're talking recruiting.
I can see it here on the left side. But yeah, I think recruiting is headed in the right direction. They're headed for another, mid-20s kind of season, I think. And that's exactly where the Utes are supposed to be. It's a great spot for them. It's very competitive with other teams with a similar brand. The big thing that will change their recruiting is that they can win the Pac-12. Not the division, which recruits don't seem to care about, but winning Pac-12 would make a difference to recruits.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that. Speaking of which, is our nice little tradition now is, hey, hashtag Firewit, right? Because, you know,
Firewit,
the
man.
Offense continues to score points, apparently. But no, and honestly, if you're new to the show,
he let the quarterback get injured, fire him. If you want your head coach to dive out in front of a blow to the quarterback and take it from him, and that didn't happen.
Well, dang it, Joseph. But, I mean, ultimately, if you're new to the show, we joke the Utes have been on quite a run regardless of the
ASU
loss.
It's working,
loss,
man. It's
ever
working,
since we talked about
it. Doing it.
Yep. So, hashtag Firewit will roll on. All right. So, let's get into some actual sports analysis here or opinions. First things first, basketball is now in session. If you didn't know.
Yeah, we're, what, 2-3 games in? I think we had an exhibition and then two real games.
Yeah, we've got two real games. The Utes are 1-1. We got a win against Maine, I believe it was. And now we've got a loss to Minnesota. And our next game, I believe, off the top of my head, Mississippi Valley State. I just said it earlier.
That's
what
right.
am I talking about?
Yeah,
and
not
so,
Mississippi State. Mississippi Valley State is
yes.
an important valley.
It is an important differentiation. But nonetheless, we're sticking with the M teams, apparently. But so, I don't know. It's interesting having – I mean, we're two games in, right? Let's give everyone the warning. Small sample size, okay, first
yes,
of all.
Very small.
So, also, we don't know the quality of the teams they've played. I mean – Maine, I'm sorry, we're not going to gauge, like, they beat Maine, woohoo, high expectations. They lost to Minnesota. I'm not going to go, oh my gosh, the floor has fallen out. They're going to be horrible.
You know, and they didn't lose badly. People kept thinking they were going to get blown out, but they hung in there. I know a lot of fans haven't had a chance to watch the Minnesota game because of the Big Ten Network. And I think that may be true for you and I, Grant. But I've seen enough of it to know that the talent on the team is real. It's really excited. They're definitely very, very young. You can tell they're young throughout, particularly when you see the fall off in the second half. You've seen that all three games. And they're going to have to figure that out. And I think that has something to do with youth. I don't know what this team is until Cedric Fairfield starts playing well. He's a good basketball player. He's going to figure it out. He's going to start playing well. Right now, he's not. But once that starts happening, I feel like the rest of the team is going to be in a different place. And then the other kind of revelation is that Hendricks kid, I think he's a redshirt freshman, they're playing really, really well, earning a lot of playing time. One of the only players with a decent plus minus against Minnesota. So expect to see more of him. Expect to see him start to squeeze out. That's really the guard. So squeeze out some guard minutes from the other guys.
Yeah, the thing to remember is Hendrick is what was his name last year? It was Devontae Dutrouve. Is that what
it was? Okay, so it's Dutrouve. Yeah.
Dutrouve, yes. And so
now he's Hendrick.
He kind of pulled what Jace Johnson did, and he came in and, you know, he was with the team, practiced with the team, but redshirted last year. He was there with half the season, and now he's here. So I guess I'm not incredibly surprised that he's in and contributing. I mean, he's got a year in the system. If you look at the people who are contributing over two games in our very small sample size, our top two players are Vonta Hendricks and Donnie Tillman. Right. And then your other top minute getter and scorer is Cedric Fairfield. Now, he's not the most efficient player right now. However,
I think that's going to come.
Yeah, I that's the thing. Small sample size. Right. Vonta Hendrick. I don't know if he's going to be a starter. I think he's got a good role coming off the bench. I'm intrigued. But if you look at this team, there's just so many new faces and freshmen versus a transfer senior in Novak Topolovic. I probably butchered that last name. Sorry, Novak. But when you got these new players coming in, and then you got Jace Johnson coming back from an injury, he hasn't really played all that much, and you could tell he's a little rusty, needs to get back up there. And other players, I think you're going to see Timmy Allen, who's been starting. He'll get better as well. So, like, I'm not worried, I guess. I think there's more reason to be hopeful and excited about this team than to be dogging it. Like I said, small sample size. Yeah. We'll see. Bearfield's going to play better. All these guys are going to develop some chemistry. I hope you're right. It would just make our strength of schedule look better and better, which will be more important when it's time for tournament
It was a bad week for the conference. I think there were six out of conference games against good teams, and the Pac-12 lost all of them. So that was frustrating, I think. But it didn't really matter too much. Yeah, I would say cautiously optimistic, although we were really gung-ho in terms of expectations in the preseason here, and I think I've ratcheted my expectations down. This team is going to take a while to gel.
Yeah,
I'm not going to put together a sterling record this year, although I wouldn't be surprised if they get into Pac-12 play and win a lot of games because they've had time to figure out what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I still expect them to finish in the top half. I'm not changing that expectation. I mean, look, they've got some games coming up that they can build some more chemistry, get into a groove before they hit games like the rivalry game against BYU. Then they're in Rupp Arena against Kentucky. And then they take a couple light games, and then they're playing Nevada, who is ranked sixth. And then the Pac-12 slate starts. So, you know, I feel like these next few games are important, not just because we want to win them. They're weaker out of conference games, but it's important for this team in regards to establishing some chemistry, getting players comfortable with the system, learning what they need to do to stay on the floor, things like that. It's just, you know, it's a learning game. We got a bunch of freshmen, a transfer who's starting at center right now, and just stuff like that. That it's just, there's a learning period. You can only learn but so much in practice, and one exhibition game and whatnot is not going to fix things in a game time situation either. So we'll see. Nonetheless, there's this thing that you wanted to talk about earlier and I think is worth talking about, and that's the football team. So
you think the football team, you want to spend just like a few minutes just touch on the 8-3 University of Utah Utes?
Yeah, and how much of a failure of a season it's been.
Yes.
Whoa, hold on a minute. Did you just already count the Colorado game as a win? Or did you
count the BYU game as a win? I wasn't counting the Colorado game. I was counting the cupcake at the end of the season.
Okay. So, nonetheless.
I've in fine form this year. I've been waiting all year for a little sex. I'm going strong.
All right, so Utah played Oregon last week and came out with a win. And like you were saying, Shelley looked pretty good. Shine looked good. That was no surprise. The offense scored points.
You know what else I loved about that game was it was exactly the kind of game that happens when they blow it, right, with a block punt. And then the touchdown. And you're like, okay, here we go. Now there's going to be a couple of three and outs. And it's just going to be one of those games where the offense shuts down, and it didn't happen. And you thought with a backup running back, and a backup quarterback, there's no way they're going to be able to make this work. And they not only got the points back, got more points. I mean, they dominated after that moment and won the rest of the game 10-0.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were competing. I mean, look, that offense was moving for some reason, just kind of couldn't punch it in.
I would give a lot of credit to the offensive line on those last two drives. Watch that throw to Jalen Dixon. Shelley was in a hammock back there. He had all day, and you can't give Jalen Dixon more than a couple of seconds, or he's going to get wide open. And that's exactly what happened. And it was Shine. There was just big, huge holes. I think Shine's probably faster than Moss. And so if he's getting big holes, and the other thing about one of the things that makes Moss a great running back is he's very patient. If he doesn't get the hole that the play is designed to give him, to find their way into the defensive backfield, Shine is just a one guy dive into the line kind of running back. But if the offensive line is working, I mean, it also means that he's very instinctive and harder to stop because he's there sooner. He's not as patient. He doesn't have that half deep where he's waiting if it's going to be a good hole or not. And I think that really plays to the advantage of the offensive line playing so well in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no, that offensive line was great. The problem is how much more of a blowout is that if they didn't give Matt Gay all those field goals?
Definitely, and I think so. So when I was calculating, I don't usually account for injuries when I do my math because I can't account for injuries for every single team. It's so hard to do, and like it's just nobody's paying me. I don't get paid enough to spend all day figuring out how much injuries are worth. And I decided to do it for this because they were so big. I took 4 points off for the Huntley to Shelley transition, and I took 2 points off for Moss to Shine. Right? Does that make sense? So I said the offense will score 6 points less on average than they would have, and I feel pretty good about that Huntley number. I think that had Huntley been under center in the red zone, they would have scored at least one, if not two more touchdowns. He's a better passer in the red zone because he throws so much harder. I think he can throw into tighter windows and more sophisticated coverages and just is a little bit more experienced than the offense that I think would have made better decisions than Shelley did. Although props to Shelley for throwing the ball away and maintaining possession and allowing all those field goals to get kicked, not getting sacked. I mean, he had a great, great game, and I don't mean to knock on how well he performed, but I think 4 points was about right. I think Tyler Huntley, that was about right. With Shine, though, I didn't see any drop-off at all. I don't think there's any reason to expect Zach Moss to have a better game than the 157 yards that Shine got.
I do not. Hold on.
Was that total? That might have been total rushing. But anyway, Shine had a great game, the kind of game you would have expected.
Shine had 174 yards, averaging about 6.7 a play.
Yeah, he's good. Man, the Utes are just loaded.
Well, that offensive line helps a ton. I mean, that last drive was all offensive line and Shine making that happen, allowing the field goal to then go up seven. I mean, you're right? Give Shelley some great credit for not costing the Utes that game at all. I mean, ultimately, like, I'm looking at numbers right now, and, you know, Jason Shelley threw 58% completion percentage, right? Tyler Huntley this season is at about 64%, right?
So, yeah,
I don't know.
And I think that's exactly the difference. One or two more passes completed, probably one of those for a touchdown in the red zone. But that's for a backup quarterback and an unheralded backup quarterback, a backup quarterback who I've been saying for years, well, he's probably going to play wide receiver or safety by the time he gets on the field. For him to do that, I think, is a real credit to him and a real credit to Troy Taylor for calling a game that Shelley could win in and for teaching a player who everybody thought was destined to be a wide receiver 16 months ago to be a Pac-12 quality starting quarterback. And that's a coaching feat as well as performance feat for Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that's fun to point out with the Oregon game was the adjustment that was made on the defensive side to move Jalon Johnson over. I'm blanking out on his name. Who was it?
Shit, I don't know. Oh gosh, I can't remember. That really nice first round wide receiver. I don't know what that. Yeah, and he had. So if you rewatch the game, you'll see he had the Utes were just playing a Simon Paul. On this one wide receiver, he was the one that got the two deep touchdowns.
Mitchell.
And right. Yeah, Mitchell. And he'd beat Julian Blackman on both of them. Blackman was supposed to be the class of the secondary, and he's not. Well, I would say he's having a good season. He's not having as great of a season as he thought he would. But he was getting beat, and so they just said, all right, Jalon, you are on him 100% of the time. So Jalon would move across the field and follow Mitchell around. And the final drive Mm-hmm. First down, second down, third down, and fourth down were all Jalen Johnson versus Mitchell, with Jalen Johnson coming away with a victory. All four of those downs, he's personally responsible for the Utes' victory in a lot of ways, particularly on that final drive when Oregon was down 7.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, Jalen's awesome. I would imagine nobody doubts that. This is his sophomore year. So we got one more year until he can go pro. So yes, we need to enjoy that one
definitely,
more year.
Jalen, definitely one more year.
Yep.
He's never intended to be a four-year player in college. One reason he went to the U is because he was confident he could start right away. 3 years and out is his plan. And that's fair. I mean, he's an NFL player. Already,
totally.
I think if he were allowed to leave this year, he'd probably get drafted in the third round. So there's, he's an excellent, excellent player. You could expect him to depart early after next year. What I love about his performance is I keep wondering, well, what would happen? What would Kyle Whittingham be able to do with a defense loaded with top 100 prospects, right? If he could recruit like USC or Alabama or Washington, how good would that defense be? And Jalen Johnson is the first player like that on Whittingham coach defense, and except in the front line, we've done a couple of tackles and stuff. But he's absolutely every bit as extraordinarily good, exactly where he needs to be, perfectly coached, the most athletic player on the field. It's exactly what you would expect, and it's exciting to me because I think as Utah's recruiting continues to uptick, the defense is just going to get better.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's amazing. No, he's a great corner, and I'm so glad we at least get him for one more year. So speaking of that, you know, one thing Colorado has proven it can do is throw the ball, even though they've been having some injuries as of late in the wide receiver court. So that secondary is going to come up big this coming Saturday. Goodness, I just blanked on what day of the week it was. But what, Joseph, I'm always curious, what's your model saying about this Colorado game?
My model is so unconcerned about this game, it makes me uncomfortable. I think it's a 93% chance to win this game, which typically correlates in a conference game to like a 17 to 20 point win. And I take 4 points off of that for not having Tyler Huntley under center still. But those are really, really good odds. It's basically a lock. I've actually got Utah favored. The most likely outcome of next week is Utah wins the Pac-12 South. Utah is so likely to beat Colorado and Oregon so likely to beat ASU. Which I give them a 63% chance. But between those two things, that's the most likely 58% chance Utah clinches the Pac-12 South on Saturday, which would be really fun, huh?
Oh, the celebrations would be fantastic. I mean, honestly, this is the first time I can consciously remember thinking, you know what, that 8 o'clock game that's not the team I cheer for, I'm actually going to stay up and watch it. I told,
it's pretty important.
Yeah,
it's pretty important.
Coworkers,
we saw Oregon is a good team. They've got a good defense. They've got the best quarterback in the country, and for my money, best quarterback in the country. They've got a really good wide receiver. I'm anticipating a pretty high scoring game, but Arizona State on the road. I think Oregon's got a really, really good shot at knocking them off their pedestal and letting the Utes take this win. And in terms of Huntley, Shelley, Drew Lisk, Chase Hansen, Utah should beat Colorado with a cardboard cutout at quarterback. Colorado is not going to be able to score. They've got one good offensive player. And I don't think Utah's going to score a ton of points, but I think that they're going to win by a really comfortable margin. And, that it's not going to be a high-stress game.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because I remember at one point this season, Colorado was ranked Like they got in the top 25 off of their
They were five and zero. They're currently 5-5, and they haven't won a game since then. And it gives me no small amount of satisfaction when my model continues to say this team isn't good. And everybody's like, oh, they're 5-0. I mean, how bad can they be? You don't get the 5-0 by accident. And then lost. It feels kind of good when my model's right. Like, my model's been right about Cal. Everybody told me I was crazy that Cal was picked for 8 wins, but here they are, 7-3, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, Cal's had a decent season, too. I mean, the Pac-12's going to get...
Yeah, I don't think they'll beat Stanford, but I do think they'll beat Colorado and wind up with an 8-win season, which is good for them. Weirdly, on the backs of an excellent defense, one of the best defenses in the conference, a terrible offense. They look like Utah 4 years ago.
Yeah, you know what annoys me, though, is how the Pac-12 can have all this parity and all this competition, and they're playing each other, playing the conference 9 times, yet any sign of parity in the Pac-12 is a weakness, yet elsewhere it means nothing. But I know for...
Yeah, I mean, it's just so obvious that people have already decided how they feel, and they will look at the evidence and interpret it in such a way so that they are right. And they have decided that the SEC is great and the Pac-12 is bad, and that's all there is to it, and nothing else matters. And what's fun for me is that I don't care. I don't feel like the BCS or the college football playoff has legitimacy to be worth worrying about. So all I really care about is win the conference, go to the Rose Bowl, win the Rose Bowl. And anything that happens on top of that is gravy. And all I care about is how are these 12 teams playing. I don't really think about what the national perspective is. It doesn't matter to me. And you have absolutely no control over it. And it's been really fun for me when used to the Mountain West, and I would spend every week being like, oh, well, these guys are ahead of them in the rankings, but they play these 3 undefeated teams, so they might lose this one. And I just don't do that anymore. I just watch the Utes, and I maybe watch the game that the team, the Utes, are playing next week, and then I watch whatever looks like fun, you know, Ohio State, Michigan State, whatever. And it's been a real relief to stop worrying about what the world thinks, because the Pac-12 doesn't care if you're a 5-7 Pac-12 champion or a 10-2 Pac-12 champion. You're going to the Rose Bowl.
Well, either way. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I care a little bit. And ultimately, it's because
You watch the SEC scheduling BS where they're all playing Citadel and junk this week. Although, in their defense, Utah's game next week isn't much better than Citadel. So we have our own late season cupcake to get warmed up. I told you, I'm ready to go, man.
Warmed up for the
championship game. So it'd be nice, you know, rest most of our starters in the second quarter and do that.
Wow, next week you are going to be a man on a mission. Bulletin board material given out here for free. But nonetheless, like, the reason I care is I want the Utes I don't want to ever say that Utah, it doesn't matter because they're in the Pac-12, they don't have a shot at getting in the playoff. I want them to have a shot. And ultimately, I need the Pac-12 to do better in bowl games this year. Then if all of a sudden we eliminate everyone in the Pac-12 wins their bowl games,
it's good parity versus
only one win last year in bowl games, which was Utah. And
yeah. You're spot on. It's the bowl games that matter. And that frustrates me because it shouldn't. It's a half a dozen games against random teams with a lot of little information. Players sit out. People are injured. We draw way too much from bowl records. But that's what the national media does. So you want them to go out there and beat some middle-of-the-road SEC and Big Ten teams so that the national perspective is Pac-12 is the, you know, second or third best conference. And that way, when everybody goes 10-2, you're still thought it was a playoff contender.
Exactly. Well, anything else you'd like to add to this conversation there, Joseph?
No, you want to make some picks?
Well, I guess we can do that. Go ahead. I already thought you pretty much made your pick. They're going to win, like...
I mean, I did, but I want to put a number on it. I am going to say... I'm going to say 21-6, Utes win.
21-6. All right. I will go 34-17. I think there's going to be a little bit more offense than you're expecting, but
I'm looking at that weather report. The high is 30, the low is 21. There might be some wind and snow, and expecting kind of a low scoring game, but it's certainly possible.
Well, I guess I wasn't considering weather. I did not adjust my score for weather, but I'm gonna own it. I'm just gonna stick with the 34-17.
No, do it. Yeah,
whatever.
It.
It's a win. A win's a win. Well, we look forward to talking to everyone next week when it's the rivalry week. I guess that no one's.
I guess we've had like three rivalry weeks already, so this one kind of feels.
You know what's interesting is it's just the fact that it at least it to me to the Utah fans I talk to and my timeline on Twitter and stuff, like everyone's talking about the Colorado game and wanting Oregon to win against ASU. There's no talk about BYU that I've seen. I haven't seen a lot of it. It's all about the Colorado game. Like, I think we've all finally caught on to the mantra of our coaching staff, which is 1 week at a time.
Shelly said in the post game, we have one game left.
Yeah.
I loved that. That was my favorite thing that has been said by any player in a while. And that's how I feel, too. I mean, you know, obviously, the next week rolls around, I'm going to want the Utes to win that game a lot. Right. But it's really crystallizes just how different the stakes are.
It's true. All right. Well, with that, I'll leave you guys with a Go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.